Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Trump's war may be coming to an end. It's not our war. Trump seems ready to dump Ukraine and NATO. And a new study of the damage caused by U.S. carbon emissions. We begin with Trump's war. Now over a month old, the war in Iran is going badly for Trump. Some close observers are already declaring Trump's war a humiliating defeat for the United States. Trump will address the nation Wednesday night and is likely to declare victory is within reach as he sees his world collapsing around him. Downturns in the U.S. stock market, a spike in oil and gasoline prices and in inflation, allies refusing to cooperate in the war, and warnings about committing U.S. ground forces to combat on Iranian territory. Trump's unsupported claims, empty threats, and backtracking on reasons for attacking Iran have finally come to a head. They also raise serious questions about his mental state. Here are some of the latest signs. First, Trump said in a social media outburst that on one hand, the U.S. is, quote, in serious discussions with a new and more reasonable regime to end our military operations in Iran. Great progress has been made. But on the other hand, that, quote, if the Hormuz Strait is not immediately open for business, we will conclude our lovely stay in Iran by blowing up and completely obliterating all of their electric generating plants, oil wells, and Karg Island, and possibly all desalinization plants. Next, in an interview with Reuters, Trump turned 180 degrees on Iran's nuclear weapon capability. He said he does not care about the enriched uranium Iran still possesses, as it is so far underground, and that, quote, the big thing we have is they're not going to have a nuclear weapon, nor do they want one. Yet he also said the next president may have to deal with a nuclear Iran. Next, claiming that Iran has agreed to allowing 20 oil tankers to deliver to the U.S., then saying the U.S. doesn't need the oil. Next, direct U.S.-Iran talks have still not occurred, despite Trump's suggestions otherwise. Pakistan's government is trying to play mediator, and to that end, the foreign ministers of Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Egypt met in Pakistan over the weekend for 2 days of discussions. Nothing so far to indicate a peace plan that the U.S. and Iran would accept. Next, Marco Rubio's statement that the war will require another few weeks is in contrast with Trump's claim that the U.S. has already achieved regime change and, quote, didn't need regime change, but we got it because of the casualties of war. And finally, increasing ballistic missile strikes by Iran on Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, as Iran shows no sign of having depleted its missile arsenal. U.S. intelligence estimates the U.S. has destroyed only about a third of Iran's missiles, contrary to Trump's claim. It's not our war. Trump seems ready to dump Ukraine and NATO. The war on Iran has made Trump desperate to get rid of the Ukraine problem. According to President Vladimir Zelensky of Ukraine, the U.S. made its offer of security guarantees needed for a peace deal in Ukraine conditional on Kyiv ceding all of the country's eastern region of Donbas to Russia. Zelensky has consistently rejected such a trade-off. Trump has said that just as the Europeans have declined to assist the U.S. on Iran, the U.S. will not help Europe on Ukraine. Marco Rubio, by the way, says that Zelensky is lying. One thing is true, Trump's anger at NATO countries for not supporting his war. Spain and Italy have rejected use of air bases on their territory to bomb Iran. Britain is allowing U.S. bombing runs on a case-by-case basis. Trump's attitude is that while the U.S. doesn't need to rely on the Strait of Hormuz for oil, the Europeans must step up or suffer the consequences. NATO just wasn't there when he asked for help with the Iran war, Trump told a Miami Beach investment conference. They didn't want to get involved, and I believe that's going to cost them dearly. The Europeans' refusal, said Trump, was, quote, a tremendous mistake. We spend hundreds of billions of dollars a year on NATO, hundreds protecting them, and we would have always been there for them. But now, based on their actions, I guess we don't have to be. That's breaking news, he added for emphasis. Why would we be there for them if they're not there for us? In an interview with The Telegraph just the other day, Trump explicitly said, quote, I am strongly considering pulling out of NATO. I was never swayed by NATO. I always knew they were a paper tiger. And Putin knows that too, by the way. Memo to Trump. Only a two-thirds vote by the Senate or an act of Congress can pull the U.S. out of NATO. That requirement was reaffirmed in the National Defense Authorization Act of 2024. Russia is different, however. Like Trump, Pete Hegseth has harsh words for NATO, but says, quote, "We don't need to air what Russia is doing. And what Russia is doing is helping Iran target U.S. bases and providing drones. Russia has also gotten a pass on the U.S. blockade of Cuba. The U.S. has allowed a Russian tanker to deliver desperately needed oil to Cuba. The White House said the tanker was allowed through the blockade for humanitarian reasons, but that U.S. policy on the blockade and on regime change in Cuba had not changed. The oil will give Cuba a few weeks of relief from its energy crisis." A new study of the damage caused by U.S. carbon emissions. The journal Nature has published a study in its March issue that for the first time seeks to assess the loss and damage to the U.S. and other economies caused by U.S. emissions. A unique feature of the study is that it calculates not just past damage, but expected future damage caused by past damage, plus future damage from future emissions, unless checked. That way of calculating illustrates not only how large loss and damages are due to fossil fuel emissions, but also just how difficult payments to settle losses and damage would be. The total loss and damage attributed to U.S. emissions since 1990 is around $10 trillion, with about a quarter of the total being damage to the United States itself. China is second at $9 trillion. Other countries affected deeply by U.S. emissions since 1990 include India and Brazil. Marshall Burke, a Stanford environmental scientist and lead author of the study, says, quote, "If you warm people up a little bit, we see very clear historical evidence you grow a little bit less quickly. If you accumulate these effects over 30 years, you just get a really large change by the end of 30 years. It's like death by a thousand cuts, and you have people being harmed who did not cause the problem, and that feels just fundamentally unfair." In other news, Trump will pay the French to abandon wind power. Donald Trump revealed the absurd lengths to which he's willing to go to prevent wind power from expanding in the United States. He will have the U.S. pay the French company Total Energy $928 million to stop offshore wind farm construction projects on the East Coast and use the payment for natural gas construction in Texas. Explaining the reason for accepting the payment, the head of Total cited the likelihood of litigation if it tried to contest Trump's order to end offshore wind projects. Lawsuits reveal Trump's illegal attempt to overturn climate change findings. In a lawsuit brought by the Union of Concerned Scientists and the Environmental Defense Fund, a judge ruled that the Trump administration had secretly and illegally brought together a bunch of climate denialists in order to issue a grossly faulty climate assessment. Government documents brought to light in the lawsuit showed that Energy Secretary Chris Wright had convened a climate working group that wrote a report specifically designed to undermine the EPA's endangerment finding, the central scientific support for warnings about threats to human health. That secretive group acted in violation of the Federal Advisory Committee Act of 1972, which requires open and transparent meetings when government policy recommendations are being made. Another lawsuit by the same two organizations seeks to force the government to reverse its elimination of the endangerment finding. Documents released by the administration under court order also reveal that the same climate deniers had also been tasked to prepare the next national climate assessment, which is sure to find that there is no climate crisis. Jakarta is sinking. Jakarta is Indonesia's capital and the world's largest city, with a population of 42 million people. About 40% of the city lies below sea level. The city is rapidly sinking, around 6 inches a year, due mainly to climate change and overdevelopment. It is estimated that nearly half of the city could be inundated and uninhabitable by 2050. Massive development projects starting in the 1970s led to exceptional use of water, resulting in very high subsidence and depletion of groundwater. As a result, the sinking city is victimized by severe flooding several months a year. As always, the poor living in shanties suffer most. who is Mohammad Baghir Ghalibaf? When Donald Trump and Marco Rubio insist that the U.S. is having discussions with certain Iranians, they may mean Mohammad Baghir Ghalibaf, who some sources have identified as the interlocutor the Trump administration has worked with in the event Iran's leadership collapses. So who is this guy? The Guardian has written an unflattering profile of Ghalibaf that paints him as a hardliner hostile to the U.S. with a long history of authoritarian actions. Trump has again raised the Venezuela model to suggest that the next Iranian leader, hand-chosen by him, would be another Delcy Rodriguez, someone amenable to doing as directed by the United States. But the Guardian's analysis suggests otherwise. Quote, in the pantheon of Iran's leaders, ruthlessly reduced by targeted assassinations, Ghalibaf stands out as a survivor. But if the U.S. president hopes he has finally located the Delcy Rodriguez of Iran, he may need to think again. Unquote. Ghalibaf has roots in the Revolutionary Guards, is a protege of Khomeini, and was involved in crushing anti-regime protests over the years. He would be another strongman ruler, but would lack the clerical credentials of Iran's post-revolutionary leaders. Venezuela's oil sector is open for business. Venezuela's acting president, Delcy Rodriguez, is showing that she understands the new post-Maduro reality in her country. She's trying to lure private investors to take over the country's oil production, assuring them of the safety of investments. Speaking to potential investors in Miami at a meeting sponsored by Saudi Arabia, Rodriguez said the country's economy was recovering fast and would create conditions, quote, where investors know that, regardless of political changes or restrictive circumstances, there is security, that Venezuela has laws that allow for the safe return of their investments. We are in a process of stabilization, she said, implementing the reforms needed for a productive environment and to attract investments that will diversify the engines of the Venezuelan economy, unquote. Washington is sure to be pleased with her words. The U.S. Embassy in Caracas has reopened. Israel imposes death sentences for Palestinians. The Israeli far right has pushed through a law that allows the death sentence to be handed down by military courts for Palestinians convicted of deadly attacks. Jewish settlers in the West Bank who commit the same crimes will not have to worry. The law isn't meant to apply to them. And I must mention No King's Day. Roughly 8 million people took part in around 3,300 rallies last Saturday, the largest in U.S. history. Nice going, America! Finally, two updates. First, the Trump-Xi Jinping summit is back on, now scheduled for mid-May. And a return visit by Xi later in the year is also being scheduled. Let's see if these trips actually take place. Both countries are accusing each other of violating fair trade practices with regard to their exports. Just as interesting as the Trump-Xi summit is a planned visit to China in April by the leader of Taiwan's largest opposition party, the Kuomintang, or KMT, at the invitation of Xi Jinping. The party has always advocated for much closer relations with China than the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, which Beijing consistently denounces. And lately, the KMT has prevented the government from pushing through a major increase in its military budget. And second, Russian oil exports have declined dramatically. It's been thought that Russia's war economy would greatly benefit from rising oil prices, but Reuters is reporting that its oil export capacity is down as much as 40%. Why so? It's the success of Ukraine's drone attacks and seizure of Russian oil tankers. Russia's two main oil export terminals on the Baltic Sea have had to suspend operations due to the largest Ukraine drone attacks of the war. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertoff. Thanks for listening, and take good care.